The Sports Cast, January 27th, 2021. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Periscope, and Apple Podcast. And if you're listening on Apple Podcast, please leave a rating and review. It will help us out tremendously. And also, you can listen to us on online digital radio. And you can listen to us on the app, The Sports Cast, for iPhone, Apple. And also on our website, thesportscast.net, for the latest and greatest lot going on in news, hirings, and retirements. Today, we have a third-time guest on the Sportscast, Chris Caravello. He was on our big show, but he was amongst three other contributors there. And this time, we have him one-on-one with me. Chris, welcome back to the Sportscast.
Great to be back. Like you said, it's my third time. I've loved doing the shows so far, so looking forward to another awesome one.
Chris Caravello, I knew him through Ken Doppel, another guest of the Sportscast. West Coast CFB, it's a website that covers the Pac-12 and I believe the Sky League, I think the Sky League. Chris, tell us a little, what was that?
Mountain West as well.
Mountain West, that's right. The Pacific Northwest, they play football as well. Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself and your involvement with West Coast and also the sports world.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm a native of Fort Walton Beach, Florida. So I'm in Santa Rosa Beach now, right down the road. I went to Florida State for my bachelor's, walked onto the track team there, and then I headed out west. So started. I worked at UCLA for a year and then went up the coast of Washington for graduate school. And fell in love with Pac-12 football, the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, even though I'm from the South and from the panhandle of Florida, I really probably heavily followed the Pac-12 ever since I graduated from UW. And for the past 2 years, we've been doing the Southern Gentleman Sports Show right here on 100.3 The Ticket, Fort Walton Beach in Pensacola. It's a great, great radio show. And then this past season, you mentioned Kent invited me to be a writer and contributor to West Coast college football, and I've had a blast covering that on a weekly basis.
Someone from the Panhandle, and I'm from Miami here in Florida. How did you get to the Pacific Northwest? Why UW, I think is the nickname of the school. Why University of Washington?
Man, that started at a young age. I had an uncle that lived in Richland, Washington, and he used to always just send me Husky gear, and just kind of fell in love with it. It was intriguing because it's so far removed from Florida and everything that I grew up around. And when I was living in Los Angeles, I was thinking about going back to graduate school. I went up and took a visit to campus, and I was in heaven. You know, I thought it was one of the most beautiful places I've ever been to in the world. And from there, you know, it just was the right fit for me. And I loved it. It was a bit of a downtime for Husky football when I was there. It was the Tyrone Willingham era. So Sark came in during my last year, turned things around, and it's been on the upswing ever since. You know, and I've had a blast keeping in touch with my West Coast ties and following from afar since I moved back to Florida.
Sticking with the Pac-12 in Washington, tell us your perspective of how Washington has been doing this past couple of years.
Yeah, so this is a strange year for everyone in college football, obviously, but none more impacted than the Pac-12, the shortened season. It was kind of a bittersweet, hollow division championship season for the Huskies, not being able to actually play in the game. And not only that, seeing Oregon, of all teams, get their spot and then win it. So, you know, I'm sure, like I said, it's bittersweet. They were 3-0, and things were looking great the first year of the Jimmy Lake era, and then close loss to Stanford, and then COVID. That's really a hard first season to really evaluate Jimmy Lake and the rest of the coaching staff. But, you know, hats off to those kids, especially the seniors that stuck it out, like Molden, and came back and had a good send off. You know, I just wish it would have been a full season of Husky football, but you know, you're coming off of a stretch with what Chris Peterson established there, the college football playoff appearance, two Pac-12 titles. And, you know, you got to feel good. You know, like I said earlier, you know, I witnessed an 0-12 season while I was a student there. So anybody that is a young adult in the third year range, you know, you want to see this place get back to where it was in the 90s under Don James, at least being relevant in the national championship discussion. And for the rest of the Pac-12, it's just gotten further and further away from that. Thankfully, they've finally parted ways with Larry Scott, and I think that the conference as a whole can start to at least have some plan of getting out of the cellar, keeping top recruits home, and build from there.
How do you see the Pac-12 now? Obviously, the big talk these past couple of years has been Oregon. How do you see it as a whole, and what are the top teams that are going to be circulating these next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, Oregon's had a great run under Mario Cristobal. It's been them versus Washington, seemingly, you know, for the last couple of years for the North. And the North has dominated that conference. SC's maybe won the title once, I think. And, you know, they blew a great shot that they had this year. And, you know, it starts with recruiting and keeping these top recruits home on the West Coast. If they're not going to USC, they better at least be going to Oregon, Washington, or Arizona State's really putting together, you know, something under Herm Edwards. Seeing them leave to go to Alabama or Clemson, you know, that just hurts the perspective of the conference as a whole nationwide. And, you know, the inability to win these big non-conference games, you know, when you do have that spotlight on you, then you don't even make a playoff run. You know, this year it was dead on arrival. You know, you finally start the season. It was in November. Everybody's already well into their season. So, yeah, it's disappointing that we got to this point, because I never saw it coming. The Pac-12 was always so – Pac-10 was so strong when, you know, when SC was under Pete Carroll. And then Oregon, like you mentioned, they really came up. And then Washington. So to see it just – nosedive over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years has just been tough for the, you know, conference as a whole and all the fans. So I think that it's going to get better now that they have better lead. Anybody was going to be better than Larry Scott. I don't know who they're going to bring in. There's a lot of names that have been floated around, but it can only go up from here as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, SC, that's the blue blood in that conference. Got to start keeping the kids home in California.
That is very true. USC has a big history in the Pac-12 and also in college football. Chris, what would it take for, I mean, you didn't mention USC, but what would it take for Pac-12 to be that strong, you know, top three conferences in the country, perhaps, you know, get ahead of the Big 12, maybe the ACC? What do you think it will take for them to be a eyeballing conference?
Well, you know, when you talk about the other Power Five conferences and breaking into that top three, you know, I think that the SEC and Big Ten, because of the, you know, how dominant Alabama, LSU before them, Ohio State looks to be a juggernaut with the recruiting that they've done and making it as far as they did this year. I don't think the gap between the ACC and the Pac-12 is big at all. The ACC, I look at it as Clemson and a bunch of really, really mediocre to bad teams. You know, with Florida State being lost in the woods the last couple of years, that conference doesn't impress me at all. So I think that if the Pac-12 could start winning some of these non-conference matchups when the opportunity presents itself, you know, you can kind of close that gap. We don't know what Clemson, you know, I assume that Clemson's going to be Clemson. They're not going to be challenged much in the ACC. They got another great recruit replacing Lawrence at quarterback. But, you know, I'm bringing this conference up because the last 2 years, you couldn't convince me that the ACC was that much better than the Pac-12 beyond Clemson. So I think that, you know, you start winning some of those games, redo the TV contract. You need better, more eyeballs on this conference as a whole. The Pac-12 disaster, the Pac-12 network is a disaster. So redo the contract, something Larry Scott failed utterly on, no direct TV access. Redo it with ESPN involved. You see how many games the ACC has played on ESPN and how, you know, the money involved has been great for that conference. So what the Pac-12 needs to kind of reflect on how bad that went under Larry Scott and get a better deal. And, you know, I think they could make up some ground on the Big 12 and certainly the ACC. I just don't, until they start winning those big matchups against you know, an Ohio State or one of the upper echelon SEC teams, I don't think anybody's going to take them seriously.
Speaking about eyeballs, do you think the schedule, I know, because usually Pac-12 are aired late at night, 10 p.m., yeah. You know, Chris, I apologize, I can't stay up that late. Do you think should move it up a little bit earlier? Is it possible? I do know the Fox has the rights right now, but what have you heard, and can it be done a little bit earlier?
Well, you know, and then this is where you come to that crossroads of making money for the conference and appeasing the fans. The fans hate those late night games, especially if you're the opposing team, because there's no way that you're going to travel to an away game and get home, you know, by any reasonable hour, maybe the next day or the day after that. The games are late at night for everyone else. Like, who on the East Coast, unless you're drunk in some bar, is tuning in to watch Oregon State against Stanford, you know, at 11 o'clock at night? That just doesn't make any sense for the common fan on the West Coast. Financially, though, hey, there's no one else competing at that time of night, so you're the only show in town. So that might, you know, be a huge selling point to keep it, the Pac-12 after dark, you know, that they have now. But I know that, you know, as far as what I see on Twitter, the fans that get stuck with those late night games have just been outraged for years. I would rather see the 9 a.m. kickoffs that they did to open the season. USC versus Arizona State during breakfast, UCLA and Cal, the crazy rescheduled games. You know, as a Central Time Zone fan, that was awesome to me. I don't know. Switch it up. At least maybe do a few of those a year and just see what the response is, you know, as well as looking at the financial aspect of it.
You think they might continue that for next season?
I think they will. You know, I think that it was such a novelty to have, I think it was Pac-12 after brunch is, you know, the hashtag Twitter. So I could definitely see them, you know, who knows what college football is going to look like. Are we going to have a normal season next year? Is everything going to go back? I know that the SEC schedule came out and there's several non-conference games on there. So are we just ditching the conference-only approach and assuming that we're going to go back to a semi-normal schedule? So I don't know. You'll have to look at some of the matchups and say, can we move this game to 9 a.m. Pacific time if it gets that noon slot, you know, on Fox or ESPN?
Yeah, which is something that everyone's probably wondering right now. Obviously, it's January. We got a couple months ahead of us to see what determines that. I know the SEC is going to make it as normal as possible. The other conferences like the Pac-12, you know, had an odd start in November. And I think if a few of them wanted it, I think it would have been better if they started back in August or September, realizing that it wasn't that bad, I guess. I don't know. It's very debatable of who you ask. But back to staying, you know, competing in college football. I mean, I've heard from, you know, previous shows here in the sportscast, and they were talking about having at least two good teams in the Pac-12, Oregon or USC, to be up there in recruiting or to be competing for the playoffs. What do you think about that? Do you think there should be at least two teams competing, maybe more? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, if you're just looking at the recruiting classes and where they fall, there's no reason why USC and Oregon shouldn't be up there, especially USC. You know, I think that a lot of the fans are sick and tired of Clay Helton, that what they did this year was in spite of him. But, you know, USC has just been this punchline as being a bathroom drain of talent. All these kids that do end up going there that are so highly ranked, it doesn't equate to wins on the field. So, you know, it's just been mismanagement. And a lot of that's got to fall with Clay Helton. And a lot fans wanted to see him gone. They're convinced that they're not going to be that great team out west as long as he's the coach. I tend to agree with them. You know, I think we've seen enough. You know, I don't know why they continue to run it back with him. And, you know, as far as Oregon goes, they've made a splash the last couple of years. They've retained Clay Helton Mario Cristobal after Auburn came calling, gave him that extension right before the Pac-12 title game. So they have some stability. They continue to bring in good classes. So, you know, but I'm going to say this again, until you start winning those big games, I don't think anybody's going to, it's not going to garner the respect that, that some of the other big programs around the country are garnering. And you look back 3 years ago, Washington versus Auburn in Atlanta. The opportunity was there. Washington failed. A year later, Oregon and Auburn. This was with Justin Herbert at quarterback. They blew it. You know, those are the games you can't lose if you're a Pac-12 team. You know, the games that you at least have a puncher's chance in, you've got to seize those moments. No one expected Alabama and USC to be a close game. Had that game actually been played in Dallas this year, USC was probably going to get blown out of the water. But the other two that I mentioned, like I said, the opportunity's there, and you got to take advantage of it. There can't be any more, you know, close but so far moments. You know, you got to start winning those games.
Yeah, you can't trip up. You got to win every game, even at Arizona State when Oregon played that game. And I had a bad feeling about that game for Oregon, and it happened. But anyways, that's another podcast to talk about. Mario Cristobal. You mentioned him a little bit earlier. Very close to you know, possibly Auburn getting him. I imagine. What if there's like another SEC team or another big team that has an open spot? Is Mario Cristobal always going to be that number one choice?
You know, I'm looking to see what. Yeah, I'd say so. And his alma mater, Miami. You know, I'm surprised. I would not be surprised if they part ways with Coach Diaz and they're immediately on the phone with Cristobal. But, you know, I think that Oregon, after getting spurned by Willie Taggart, supposedly going to his dream job at FSU, you know, I think Phil Knight, as long as he's in Eugene and around that program and school, that he'll write a blank check. You know, that school desperately wants to stay relevant, and had Mario Cristobal left, I think it would have been devastating for them. So, yeah, I think they're going to keep him in Eugene at all costs, even if the SEC or the Hurricanes did come calling.
One team I've been hearing, let's just say hearing, Nick Saban, you know, won a lot of championships. You know, he's getting up there in age. I believe 68, 69 years old. That position could be opened up in the next couple years, 5 years. Would that be a spot that Mario cannot say no to?
I don't think anybody could say no to that. You know, it'll be interesting to see what Sark does in Texas or some of the other assistants that Saban's had on staff that are at least, you know, doing respectable at other schools. That's an interesting, you know, moment that we'll be looking at sometime down the road is who does succeed Saban at Alabama. If it was, you know, one of his former assistants like Coach Cristobal, Sark, or somebody that's on the staff that we're not even talking about right now. It seems that everybody that comes back into Tuscaloosa to rehab their image, I mean, look what Kiffin did. You know, they end up, it might not be right away, but several years later, they've rebuilt themselves. So any one of those guys that I just named, I think could be, you know, in the running down the road, you know. Who knows? Saban doesn't look like he's slowing down anytime soon, though.
No, he just had a fantastic season this past season, one of the best teams. I don't know if it was a COVID factor, but which is my next question. National championship, they pummeled Ohio State, not even close, 52-24. What were your thoughts, and can you name another team that could have done better?
Oh, man. I thought after watching the SEC title game, the way that Florida at least kept it within striking distance, that maybe a team of Ohio State's caliber would have enough offensive firepower to at least make it a shootout. But, you know, losing the running back on the first play of the game, I know Master Teague scored two TDs, short yardage ones, but losing a guy that had contributed so much to their offense for Ohio State right off the bat, I thought the game was over right then and there. You know, they were going to have to make this thing a track meet to even have a shot in hell at staying with Alabama. Because I think that, you know, COVID aside, And that's a shame that we even have to like look at this year's Alabama team with like the what if. You know, I don't put an asterisk next to what they did at all simply because this was one of the best offenses, you know, from a sure athleticism standpoint that I think I've ever seen. You know, I saw some really good teams in person, early 2000s Miami, FSU teams, several great USC teams under Carroll. But this Alabama offense, man, that was something else. So I just think that regardless of the era or year, that you could probably stack that offense up against, you know, some of the great ones. But as for Ohio State, like I said, you know, losing an elite player like they did so early in the game, it reminded me of, I mean, these are two totally different eras of Alabama football, but when they played Texas and Colt McCoy went down, you know, in that game, it's like, man, you wish you would have seen them against a full-strength Ohio State, but I don't think it would have mattered.
Yeah, definitely, like you were saying, one of the best offenses I've seen from Alabama, especially when I've been following them like pretty well deep in the past 10 years, 10 seasons, and this one is for sure stands up by a lot. Even even from a year ago where they didn't make the playoffs, you know, they had to go to Orlando and play a smaller bowl game. So it's quite interesting how they can turn things around with their consistent recruiting. And you know, Mario Cristobal will be the best candidate because he's such a good recruiter. Goes down deep in the weeds. But obviously, we don't know when that will happen, if it will ever happen. And we'll see whose muscles will be flexing for him. Big news today, Tennessee hiring Josh Heupel as their next head coach. He's a former He's now the former UCF head coach. Chris, what are your thoughts about this? Would you say this is a good hire, or we'll see what happens?
Yeah, I don't see how they could have – I don't know where they would have gone to make this, you know, a better hire. Who else was going to touch this team with the possible NCAA sanctions that are almost certainly coming down? I don't think they could have gotten any big name from the Power Five conferences. No alumni was going to step in. I thought T. Martin might have had a shot because he was on the prior staff. But, you know, I'm very surprised that it was so rushed. I mean, I guess because Danny White just left UCF and he was the one making this hire, why it makes sense he'd bring in a coach that he's familiar with. But I just don't see what Tennessee could have done to, you know, maybe make this a sexier hire, a bigger splash. You know, I know those fans have got to be frustrated. This is like two decades now where the programs just seem like it's in disarray. So, you know, Heupel, it's not promising the fact that UCF kind of regressed each year that he was there after he took over for Frost. And the problems that UCF had on defense this year in particular, I'd be alarmed if I was a Tennessee fan, but at the same time, who else were they going to get? So this remains to be seen, but man, I don't feel good about it.
Something, we'll see how it goes. I know that issue with Pruitt, and there was a lot of drama there. Tennessee has a rich history in college football. Rivalry, like their rivalry is Alabama, and Alabama would say the same, but it hasn't really lived up to it these past couple years. Same for Florida Gators, another rivalry team for the Tennessee Volunteers. We wish them the best, hope the best, because I know if we could see a strong Tennessee, they'll definitely change the whole dynamic in college football. You cover a little bit about NFL, Super Bowl's coming up. I know we have a week and a half to the big game. What are your thoughts about these two perennial clubs?
Yeah, if you would have, you know, ask my opinion when Brady made the crazy decision to leave New England and go to Tampa, I would have said, no way that's going to work out. You know, he's so far along in his age, and Tampa has just been so disappointing the last, you know, 10 years. I think they've had two winning seasons. I couldn't have foreseen this, you know, especially when they struggled kind of early in the season. They got swept by the Saints. There's a couple other primetime games where they had to either come storming back from huge deficits or losing to teams that I think they shouldn't have. for them to have peaked at the right moment and taken care of business in the playoffs, especially the last 2 weeks, man, that's an awesome story. And just the fact that they got there, that the first team to host a Super Bowl, that's pretty awesome. And fortuitous for them, given the COVID situation, they don't have to travel. They can just stay at home in their own houses. Don't have to worry about that aspect of it. But, man, they're going up against a team that seems to be just on another level offensively. So as good as Tampa's defense is, and I think that's really the reason they got to this point is the defense. I think that they're going to be lacking in trying to keep up with Kansas City, especially – man, if you would have said that Tom Brady would have thrown that many interceptions last game against the Packers and they still would have won, I said, no way. But that's how it happened. You know, Green Bay couldn't take care of those opportunities that Tampa gifted them. But if Brady throws that many interceptions against the Chiefs, man, this is going to be a blowout.
The GOAT prevails, as always, as usual. Chris, tell us about your West Coast CFB. What type of articles do you write? Recruiting, cover Washington. What is your subject matter?
It's kind of been a jack of all trades, you know. They right from the get go. I joined last off season, so it was a mixture, you know, covering just the towns and cities that some of these colleges reside in. Going back and looking at the all decade teams from the Pac-12 and. Then when we got into the season, it was like a weekly breakdown of the best games, best plays, player of the week, coach of the week, team of the week. And then it was a recap of a very weird season in the Pac-12. I'm looking forward to next season. It's going to be a little, you know, maybe a more normal season where you get to cover it over the course of several months instead of this condensed one. But I'm thankful for the opportunity. It was a lot of fun, and it was great to learn about some of these rosters that normally I wouldn't have, you know, dove in so deep into in looking at the recruiting situation and coaching staff. So it was really neat. And I liked the interaction amongst all the fan bases that read the articles. I got great feedback. So instead of being primarily a Washington fan on Twitter and covering it from that lens, you know, it got to branch out to the other 11 teams in the conference. And it's a lot, but it was a ton of fun.
How do you see how is UW's recruiting so far and also the Pac-12 overall?
Well, Washington has their quarterback of the future. And if you want to, you know, judge a recruiting class by the crown jewel, I think that having a five-star quarterback, it should alleviate a lot of other disappointments. But the fact that Washington had two other top-notch five-star recruits right in their backyard, you know, in the city of Seattle, and whiff on them is probably disappointing a lot of fans right now and making them kind of, you know, second guess what Jimmy Lake is doing from a recruiting standpoint. As far as the rest of the conference, you know, USC does seem like it is starting to put up the fence in its own backyard and keep some of those Southern California kids from looking elsewhere. That's huge. You know, I know a lot of fans out west don't want to hear this, but if USC is the prominent team in the conference and at least is competing for the conference title and looks competent to the rest of the country, that helps everybody else. You know, the perspective, it would be like the SEC if Bama was down on its luck for several years, which actually happened, you know, in the early 2000s before Saban got there. I wasn't born in, you know, 1998. You know, I remember the bad days in Tuscaloosa. So, you know, when you try to say that, oh, things are cyclical, the conference will come back, USC will come back, but, you know, we're in this instant gratification age and we want to see results now. It's got to start now that we're in the off season with having a successful recruiting cycle in Los Angeles, Eugene, Seattle. And you know, you start to build your momentum for 2021 with this recruiting cycle.
And that is part of the spring cycle of college football. You know, people think it stops in January. No, it keeps going with the recruiting and the coaching and all that stuff. So definitely college football is all year long. Anyways, we're coming to a close. Our Twitter poll question of the day, Chris, is what goes best chocolate cake, ice cream, whipped cream, hot fudge, and fruit. Those are the choices on our Twitter account. What is your answer?
Out of those answers, I would say the hot fudge, but I'm a coffee guy, so I think, you know, like a espresso or something goes good with, you know, that dark chocolate. Kind of has that good reaction, but that's just me.
That's awesome. Is it because of your Italian heritage, the espresso?
Yeah, you know, that and my time in Seattle. You know, that was my college job in the summer. Was working at Starbucks.
Did you?
I was at UW. Wow. Yeah, and I gotta just, you know, it totally kicked off my love for coffee. So that is definitely my vice these days, and it goes great with chocolate and chocolate cake.
The most popular coffee comes from Seattle, and from our Twitter poll, 83% chose ice cream, then whipped cream, 20% hot fudge, and fruit have zero, but they have 8 hours to reply.
All right, go vote.
So, Chris, what is the best way to reach you online and read some of your work and hear your work?
Yeah. At Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, just type in Nolecore, NOLECORE. You can get a hold of me on all my social media handles, westcoastcollegefootball.com to read all of my articles, and SouthernGentlemanSports.com. Every Saturday morning, we stream it live, so you can definitely tweet us or listen in and call in.
Nolecore, is that because you were a Nole fan before? Is that why?
That is. Okay. So the story behind that, I mentioned I worked at UCLA for a hot minute, and I was on I was working at the Wooden Center, and we had a softball team for intramurals, and everybody wrote their nickname on the side of their hat. I didn't have a nickname, so they always referred to me as the Nole, or, you know, FSU, Chris. And I was just like, all right, you know, I'm a hardcore Seminole, so I just put Nolecore, and it's stuck like 15 years now.
Wish we had time to talk about the Noles and their future.
Yeah, maybe one day. they'll be back.
Yeah, they're not as bad as Tennessee, right?
No, I think that at least I hope not.
Man. Oh man, I remember because I grew up in Florida as well, so you know you always hear Noles or Gators, and you know Noles had had a prominent time with Bobby Bowden, and now they're trying to relive those moments again. But it's interesting the whole thing, and this kind of reminds me of, I'm not sure if you follow the Premier League, Manchester United.
Yeah.
Well, pretty much they had a coach called Sir Alex. He coached them for 20 years, glory years, very similar to Nick Saban. And right now they're going through a slump this past 5-8 years. So I could see that happening in Alabama. I know no fan wants to hear that, but they could go to a slump until they see the glory days again. You know, like the rebuild could take years.
You never think when you're on top that there's ever going to be a drop-off. And certainly not to the point where you'd be missing bowl games.
Yeah.
That was a tough pill to swallow for Florida State fans.
It is. But we'll see. We'll hopefully relive those glory days again. And you can reach us at the Sportscast1 on Twitter or at thesportscast.net on our website. Tomorrow we have Rocho and Jones. They'll be going over the NFL, what happened this past weekend, a championship weekend. And, of course, they'll be doing some NBA spurts and, of course, previewing the Super Bowl. We're having a big show Super Bowl this weekend. Actually, next weekend because of scheduling, we'll be previewing the Buccaneers and the Chiefs Super Bowl LV in Tampa Bay in Florida and things like that. But, anyways, wow, Chris Caravello, I'm glad you're on. You've been amazing. And we'll probably see more of you in the future.
Hope so. Thanks for having me.
Have a good night, and let's rock and roll.